Welcome to Metaphysical Romp with Reverend Paul Hasselbeck and co-host Reverends Bill Holton and Cher Holton. Discover practical applications to bring 21st century metaphysics to work in your life. Here's your host, Paul Hasselbeck.
Welcome to another edition of Metaphysical Romp 2. This is the Reverend Dr. Paul Hasselbeck, one of your hosts, and I'm with my co-host. Hi, guys.
Hello, this is Reverend Dr. Cher Holton, and I'm here with...
And this is the Reverend Dr. Bill Holton. Glad to be with you. And as you know, Cher and I are the co-founders of an online ministry called the Global Center for Spiritual Awakening.com. And you can take the short route to our site by simply using yourspiritualpractice.com.
Your spiritual practice. I bet if you just type that in, it would just pop up, wouldn't it?
It takes you right to, it takes you to that and our podcast. We have that podcast as
well. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So both of those come up. But it usually, when you type that into the Google, it comes up as the Global Center. It flips to that right away.
Yeah, but our listeners need to know about your independent, your other podcast. So,
right. Yeah, it's just a quick podcast that we do. We try to do it every week, but it hasn't been every week. But we just share a spiritual practice. We focus on a spiritual practice for the podcast and explain it, talk about it a little bit, and leave the listener with it for the week.
Fantastic. That's really good. Okay, so it is another beautiful day in my consciousness.
Oh, yes, it's another beautiful day in my consciousness.
And it's another beautiful day and beautiful day in my consciousness.
I love the beautiful day. B-U-T-A-F-U-L, beautiful. And of course, I have my website, paulhasselbeck.com, where I have my calendar and where I post the Absolute Word. If you like the Absolute Word, you can subscribe to it. And that information is on my website, paulhasselbeck.com. Just send me an email. So today, we're looking at the law of the idea and its manifestations. We started it last week, but we're going to probably just restart it this week and because we'll have more time to talk about it. And then we'll have our break. And then after our break, we're going to be looking at vows, V-O-W-S, and possibly walking on water from Bill's book, Reverend Bill, Unplugged and Unedited. Hooray! Right.
And since this is a podcast, we could tell people we're demonstrating walking on water.
Right. That's right.
Just imagine it in your mind.
I do it in the winter.
That's right. Yes.
Walk on that ice. Okay. And then the absolute word is from March 17th, 2019. And the word is imagination. I imagine you, Bill and Cher, you guys are ready to rock and roll.
We are ready.
Ready to go.
Yes.
Okay, so we're going to look at idea and its manifestations, and this is another one of those laws that there's only one citation I found, and it's from Charles Fillmore, Atom Smashing Power of Mind.
So I will read it again to remind everybody, because we did read it last time, but we wanted to talk more about it. So let's just remind everybody what it is. Here's what Charles says. Many delusions arise among Christians because they lack understanding of the law of the idea and its manifestations. All things, all actions, all principles are working toward the unity of God, man, and the universe. But there must be a readjustment and a cleansing of the whole mass. If there are things, whether mental or physical, that are not up to the high standard of spirit, they must die. Jesus on the Mount spoke of his death that was to follow. This death is of the material perception of substance and life, which is reflected in man's body of flesh. This must perish. The limited concept of matter and of a material body must be transformed so that the true spiritual body may appear.
Wow. So, many delusions arise among Christians because they lack understanding of the law of the idea and its manifestations. And I would include those who are unity Christians.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah. All things, all actions, all principles are working toward the unity of God, man, and the universe. I find that a very curious statement because
yes.
it makes it sound like we're not already unified at the level of the absolute, doesn't mm-hmm. it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think I probably said this at our last show because it popped in my head again, that it reminds me of that phrase we use in New Thought a lot, that the universe is wired in our behalf.
Yes. Yes.
That sentence sort of implies that everything's working toward that unity and it's up to us to manifest it.
Yeah. And I'm not even a great fan that the universe is wired for our...
Oh, I'm not either. No.
In fact, I'm starting to slip that into the New Age category rather into a New Thought category.
Yeah, that's probably another statement for our Get Over It 3 book.
We really ought to start collecting those again, I guess. Right?
Yeah.
Okay, so then, but there must be a readjustment and cleansing of the whole mass. So... what is he referring to there? Certainly God doesn't need to be cleansed.
I think they mean mess.
maybe. Yes. If there are things, whether mental or physical, that are not up to the high standard of spirit, they must die. Wow. I'm not sure I'm agreeing with this. I think be transformed for sure. And obviously from that sentence, the whole mass is the whole mass of the mental and physical that are not up to the high standard of spirit.
And what does that mean, they must die? What is it, like if you have a physical issue.
I think he's talking about the physical body, whole body.
The body must die?
Well, I agree that, but then there's other bodies we get to play in, but in my opinion, mm-hmm. yeah. So Jesus on the Mount spoke of his death that was to follow. This death is of the material perception of substance and life, which is reflected in man's body of flesh. So material perception, that's in the mind, yes. That's mental. And this material perception of the substance and life, this is what must perish. So that's what he's talking about, must die. The limited concept of matter and of a material body must be transformed so that the true spiritual body may appear. Yeah, I'm not grooving on this much, guys.
Yeah.
I mean, you guys know, and I don't know if I talked about it here, but I'm beginning to think that matter and consciousness coexist, are concomitant with the absolute, that all three occur simultaneously, and there's never one without the other. And so to think that matter must go away, and this contradicts Charles' desire to live forever.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say too. And I think I'd be more comfortable with this if he had taken the perspective of that our material desires, wants, needs, etc., should be subservient to spiritual thoughts and choices and actions.
Yeah. So piggybacking on that, to put it in the most neutral language that I can think of in this moment, awareness of our spiritual nature is not about becoming perfect as much as it is becoming better human beings. I don't think the purpose of all of this is to get rid of our humanity. It's what we use to make us better humans. Yeah,
it's how we can master the art of living in this skin school experience.
Exactly.
Using our principles and truth that we know.
I mean, in the past, I would have said being the best Christ I could be. Mm-hmm. That's feeling more and more like jargon the more I say it. And it's really about being the best human I can be. All three of us have begun to escape or have escaped this idea that somehow our humanity is bad, and that the goal is to go home to God or remember our spiritual identity and stop having a human identity. I'm not sure I agree with that anymore. I'm pretty sure I don't agree with that anymore.
Yeah, and it's certainly what we've all been taught from our embedded theology of our youth and young adulthood.
Yep.
It's still being taught, of course, but for those who are still implanted in mainstream religions, unfortunately, it's just an outlandish perspective.
Yeah, so I think it's one of those myths that have lived for a long time And we've just begun to question, and I'm sure other people have too. Yeah.
And it's more an alignment. Yeah, it's an alignment of our spiritual and our human natures or aspects or qualities or beingness. You know, it's like, how can I be the best human I can be that allows me to express the spiritual beingness of what I really am?
Yes, exactly. That was very well put. So it's how do we use our awareness of our divine identity? We could say our the divine principles or attributes that we have, and how do we now use them in our consciousness and in our physical bodies? Mm-hmm. And Bill said that really clearly too. How do we be that best we can be?
Yeah.
All right.
And once again, he really didn't define the law of the idea and its manifestations. And I'm just going to just say that's got to be mind idea expression, mind idea manifestation.
Definitely.
Which is Charles' definition of divine order. It's really referring to the law of divine order. So that's another one. It's really, as we're getting down to the end of these, it's really becoming really clear. There's only a few laws with many names.
Yeah, right. The many faces of the laws.
Yes, right. The many faces of the law.
Or one law, many names.
Yes, indeed. So I think we have time to go on to the law of divine imagery. The law of divine imagery. And I think this is another one with one quote, and it comes from Charles's book, Mysteries of Genesis. So we're going to suspect we're going to see some sort of metaphysical interpretation here, but maybe not.
Let's see what he says.
Okay.
He says, divine mind images its ideas definitely and in every detail. The idea precedes the fulfillment. Mind idea expression.
Right.
Let there be represents the perfect confidence necessary to demonstration.
Yep.
Ideas active and bring forth after their kind. They express themselves under the law of divine imagery. The seed is within the thought and is reproduced through thought activity until thought habits are formed. Thoughts become fixed in the earth or formed consciousness. In divine mind, all is good. Again, a definite degree of mind unfoldment has been attained. Man, in forming his world, goes through the same mental process working under divine law. Jesus said the seed is the word of God.
Yes, so this is another one that we could put under the two, mind idea manifestation or expression and the law of mind action. Yeah. And really, we've been saying quite some time, the law of mind action is just a more specific statement of mind idea expression.
Yeah, yes. It is. Yes. Yeah, I do like his one sentence. And I think he has said this somewhere before. It's striking a memory in my brain, but let there be represents the perfect confidence necessary to demonstration. I really like that. And I think we've talked about that before.
We have.
It's not like I wish or I'm asking. It's let there be, which bam, it is.
Yeah. And if we wanted to amp that up, we could, instead of said let there be, we can say there is.
There is. You're right. Yes.
Right. There is.
Good point.
Wow. Bill, you haven't said much. You want to add something?
I'm thinking about his last, the last quote there that Cheryl read when she said, the seed is the word of God. We had talked about the word of God before being logos, logos meaning vibration or primordial pulse. So for me, the word of God underwrites the seed.
Absolutely. And it always does.
Yeah.
It's not really
the same thing. It's what underwrites the seed.
Yeah.
It's what underwrites the growth.
Yeah. And what's interesting, this isn't capitalized. And
I noticed that too. Yeah.
In one of those weird places where he does capitalize to represent the logo. Mm-hmm. So I think it's time for us to pivot. Once again, as we're moving towards Bill's book, and I'm going to pull that up. So it's time for us to turn to Reverend Bill, Unplugged and Unedited. Woohoo!
Yay!
So we are going to start on page 198 with the term is vows, V-O-W-S, and Cher, take it away.
Yeah, and this is one where Bill, it's very short. This is a really short one. I think it's only one sentence, but he has one of his typical Billism play on words. So here's what he says. It's much better to take a vow of silence than risk voicing a set of vows that cause harm to relationships and interfere with someone's spiritual growth.
Wow.
Isn't that great? I just love that when I saw it.
Yeah, you don't want your vows to run amok.
Exactly. And I think we're learning more and more just at the risk of I don't want to get into a political discussion, but with what our country's going through right now, our world, the power of words. Words matter.
Yes.
And we're starting to realize how impactful words can be. And you never know the impact you're having on somebody by the words you choose to say, because you never know who's listening or how they're going to interpret what you're saying. So I love that. Take a vow of silence rather than saying things that are going to harm.
Yeah. So this is that shutting up.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there was that, when I was going through school, there were three questions. It might've been four that you're asked. Before you speak up, is it true? Is it necessary? And is it helpful?
Yeah. I vaguely remember that. Yeah, I've seen that. They have posters out with those questions on now, too. We have it on our Pinterest board. I know. I've pinned that from somewhere.
And it's just that, you know, sometimes we speak way too fast before considering the impact on others and even the impact on our own consciousness by saying,
You know, I might also want to add, do no harm.
Do no harm. Are these words harmful?
Yeah.
And then there's Thumper from the old classic story who said, if you can't say something nice, then don't say anything at all.
Yes. And that has morphed in to, if you can't say something nice, come closer.
Oh, no.
That's horrible, isn't it? Yeah, but
yeah.
I've used it as a joke, just like I did now, but yeah.
Yeah. There's another quote, I think it was Abraham Lincoln, supposedly, he didn't say half the things they say he said, but according to the theory, Abraham Lincoln said, it's better to remain silent and be thought a fool than to speak up and remove all doubt.
Oh, my goodness. I don't care who said that. That is a keeper.
Yeah, yeah. So I really love this one. It's
one of those short, pithy ones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's good.
It's something I think we all know at some level, and we need to be reminded of it constantly. Mm-hmm.
And you know, I'm just going to take this here. Here's a kitchen table thing, but I'm going to take a little turn with this because I think about as spiritual teachers, we need to be very careful how we present information too, that we don't do what the three of us call metaphysical malpractice.
Yes.
And I think a lot of spiritual leaders out there need to really be aware that when you say things, you may be creating a belief in people that isn't consistent with truth, capital T truth.
Yes.
Like, what are you doing to cause this?
Right.
That kind of thing.
Never a question to ask somebody else.
No.
It's always a question to ask oneself. What
right.
is part in this? Yeah.
Yeah.
I have one exception to that, and that is if someone asks me, what do I think is going on? And then I always share it in the first person anyway. It's like, when something like this happens in my life,
mm-hmm.
I always reflect, is there anything that I've done or I'm mm-hmm. thinking that contributed to its coming forth?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's very valid. I mean, to me, that's a way. It's still up to them to decide how to interpret, you know, how to do that for themselves. Yeah. But I know a lot of people won't even go to their church if they're sick because right. they're so afraid everybody's going to think that they have somehow fallen short. And that's just our own unity guilt. It's the same
That's like part of the DNA of unity that I hope we're in the process of changing.
Yeah, me too.
Me too.
I'd also like to touch on the silence. Silence is a polarity when you think about it. Silence can be louder than words on mm-hmm. the one hand. Says a lot more than verbalizing anything, the power of silence. And then on the other hand, though, if you're silent, it can be construed as giving consent.
Yes.
Yeah. that's
so those point. Are the polarities associated with how powerful silence can be.
Absolutely. Wow.
Oh, that's an interesting thought too, because you really have to ask yourself that question. And it goes back to your four questions that started this whole conversation is, what's going to be the impact if I actually say this?
Yeah.
And I know, for example, I was involved in a conversation yesterday with family, and some issues came up that I really disagreed with from a very fundamental level, but it wasn't going to make any difference in that conversation. And it could have caused some harmful impact if I'd have really shot it out.
Yeah.
And I decided to stay quiet. But then afterward, I told Bill, I'm not sure if I should have, I don't want them to think I agreed with that. And yet at the same time, it wasn't worth an argument.
Yeah.
And that's the fine line we walk.
Yes, it is. And I have that every Christmas when I go home to my family.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, our belief systems are so opposite each other's when they bring up that thought system, I just decide to be silent. And it might be, it's easier, number one. And my silence, they could be interpreting as consent.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure our families know enough about what we believe that they know it's not consent. I'm thinking they probably appreciate the fact that we stay silent. They're probably nervous the whole time we're in a church service. For example, I'm wondering if we're going to say it.
And I'm really thinking that probably a lot of our listeners, shout out to all of you, have experienced us personally in a classroom setting where we don't hold back at all.
Right. Yes. And you that's know? The issue. Yeah. The mm-hmm. setting helps determine.
We do not hold. I do not hold back with concern about whether a student's going to like or dislike what I'm going to say.
And that's a whole different setting.
Yeah. Whole different settings. So,
which is what polarities are all about. You know, you have to decide when am I going to use what with what.
Yeah.
I never really thought we would spend all our time on this one little sentence, but lo and behold,
we did. And I think it is time for us to move on to the absolute word. So here we go. The absolute word is based on Sunday messages appearing in the Daily Word, a copyrighted Unity publication, and has been used with permission. And this is from Sunday, March 17th, 2019. The word is imagination. I imagine new and positive possibilities for my life. The psalmist shared, keep your heart with all vigilance, for from it flow the springs of life. And that's actually, it wasn't the psalmist. It's the person who wrote Proverbs 4:23. I didn't get that right. When I imagine the unlimited possibilities available to me, I also consider their words attributed to Jesus. Whoever does not doubt in his heart, but believes that what he says will come to pass, it will be done for him. I use my power of imagination to shape and form ideas, both divine and relative. It is through desire that what I imagine becomes part of my inner experience. I use imagination to shape divine ideas into new possibilities, transforming today's vision into tomorrow's adventure. My heart-centered belief in my divinity and the power of imagination ensures that my life grows and expands in beautiful ways. I imagine new and positive possibilities for my life. I imagine new and positive possibilities for my life. And of course, the three of us imagine new and positive possibilities for the lives of our podcast listeners. And we are grateful to each of you. You guys have any final words?
Just reaffirm that for everyone. And it's been a great show. Thank you for listening.
Yeah. Once again, it's our privilege.
It is. And so it is. And thank you for listening. Goodbye for now.